Welcome to Art Heroes with Gabe Leach, where we believe art heals, connects, and galvanizes. I'm your host, Joanna Patrice Haggerty. On this show, I am honored to have some of the nation's most innovative leaders, artists, and creative business owners to share their unique and valuable experiences, processes, practical tips, and inspirations. Today with me is Eliza Hill, who is a self-taught drummer who began playing drums at the young age of 9 years old on a drum set that she made herself. And of course, the rest is history. Eliza has been playing in bands since she was 11 and started playing shows and touring out of town since the age of 15. Some of her current projects include Ishtari, psych metal rock and roll group, the Smoky Mountain Sirens, and Tight. Tight is based out of the Greenville, South Carolina area and brings notes of glam rock, garage, and punk. Always growing and evolving, there are many other projects and cool stuff going on for Eliza. I brought her on to talk about all things music and drums, but Eliza, welcome to my show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I love it. First off, I like psyched myself out. Say your first band name again. Did I say it right?
Ishtari.
I think I asked you before we got on and I like totally freaked out. So Ishtari, there we go. I'm so excited to have you on. I have loved and known you for years and years in this lovely little town of Asheville, North Carolina.
Yes.
It's been really fun to watch you in your career. And so usually for people who've been on my show, we always start at the beginning and I love how your bio really just talks about it. So first off, tell me about this drum set you made. Tell me about how that instrument just like drew you in. I love these stories.
So this is actually kind of funny. And I'm just going to tell you guys the real story.
We want the real.
When I was nine, I always had like an uncle and my dad like kind of knows how to play the drums. My uncle is a drummer, but it didn't really register with me that that was like the deal until I started playing. So like I had it in my genes, I guess. Mm. But I went to go see the School of Rock in theaters and yes. I was like, I have to do this. And so I went to my house and got like a little table and put a bunch of plastic pots and like yes. random stuff. And I found a pair of drumsticks, I guess, in my brother's room or something. And I just made my own drum set and I played it. But I played it every day and every second that I could, you know, get to play it. Wow. And I took it very seriously.
I love that.
Yes. And so, and then I got a real drum set for my 10th birthday. I guess a little before my 10th birthday, maybe. And I was like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like.
Well, first off, I have to say, my brother was a drummer. I've dated many drummers. Like, I love the drums. I think they're amazing. But let's also be honest, when you're learning, they're a little intense. You have to practice a lot. How did your family respond to you with these pots and pans on the table? Clearly, they bought you the kit, yeah. so they supported.
I mean, they were all down. Like, my mom and dad are so cool. And especially like my mom, as I got older and started to just like have band practice all the time in the garage, like she was always so awesome and supportive. And I feel really grateful for that. But it was kind of intense, like, you know, playing a real drum set. But I realized that drumming is a very intuitive instrument and rhythm is really intuitive. And like, you know, when we walk and talk and go about our day, we're in a rhythm. And when we hear music, we don't even think about it. And we like kind of move and start, you know, feeling that. And playing the drums is just a matter of translating that into an external motion, which is hard. But I think it was a fun instrument to teach myself because it is so intuitive and I picked it up so easily.
Oh, I love that you brought that conversation because a lot of people, I'm sure you get this too, Eliza, like, wow, it's amazing you're this musician. You're like, well, you could too. You just have to get the pots and pans out and bang on them for years.
Yeah, and practice.
Right. So actually what I have found, I just started ukulele lessons with local Melissa Hyman. She's amazing.
Yes, I love Melissa.
And it, you're right. The difference between actually being a musician isn't necessarily the initial skill set. It's just the continual fortitude of being willing to practice. Yes. And I love for you that you were able to really connect the idea of your innate being, right? You're walking, you're totally right. The way we speak always has a cadence and mm-hmm. being able to translate that. Did you recognize that at an early age or again, where you sort of just like bang in and then as you've worked through the skill set, you've really been able to put those pieces together?
Yeah, it wasn't until I got older that I, you know, realized I was like, oh, like this is how it feels and this is what it's about to me. But also a huge part of becoming a musician for me, and I think in general, is listening. And people, you know, that's a really important, like a key thing is to just listen. I listened so intensely to like all kinds of music all the time, almost as much as I actually practiced. And that was a huge component.
So what were some of those things that you were listening to, young little Eliza with her pots and pans?
Oh, God. Well, I remember, I mean, it was kind of the classics that everybody kind of grows up on, I guess. But I realized that the music that my friends were listening to and that I was around was not what I liked. And so I asked my dad to download a bunch of stuff onto this, like, big iPod that I had that was cool. I was like, show me some, like, good music that I want to listen to and I want to play to. And so it was, like, The Who, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, like I love Mitch Mitchell and Keith Moon and John Bonham, of course, is like a huge influence to me. So it was the classics. For
I love it. Well, and it's the classic rock, which is important, right? There's a lot of different classics, but I love that you bring a lot of that rock sound, I think, into the modern day. So let's kind of like take that out a little, right? How did you go from the pots and pans to the parents getting the set to having the garage band practices? What was that process like for you?
I mean, I just kind of did it. I don't know.
When you're that young, sometimes you just are like, hey.
I wanted to be doing all the time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So tell me about some of the first projects you were in and what that experience, especially like beginning to tour at age 15. I mean, you are still so young and in this developmental stage, and here you are getting on stages, going out of town. Like, just talk to me about that.
Yeah. So I started like playing most, like, you know, a lot of gigs at 15, but I didn't go out of town until I was 17. And so when I was 15, I was just like, we had this big group of friends and everybody was in a band with kind of, you know, each other. And we would put on these showcases in this barn in Andrew Scatchy's mom's backyard.
Yes.
And he later took that and turned it into an actual legitimate festival called Barnaroo.
That's right.
That ended up being out in Leicester. Yeah. But that all started with us just like kicking up dust in a barn, literally. So I don't know, I guess like I was in bands with like so-and-so and like my friends. And then I guess Andrew's drummer decided to like go to college and do his stuff. So I joined that band and that's where I started playing like the bulk of my like beginning live shows. And then when I turned 17, we had our first out of town show in Nashville. And I mean, I was in that band from that age to like, I mean, for 10 years, because I had my last official, like, in the band show with them right before lockdown.
Wow. What a crazy experience. So 10 years of playing music, again, with your, like, childhood friends, these people you've known forever, these people you were kicking up dust. I love that phrase. What was some of the experiences or maybe the high-level knowledge of 10 years of being in a band, touring as a musician, setting up shows? Like, just talk to me about that time, because people are usually so fascinated about that part of the industry.
Yeah, it was a great learning experience. And I did not end up like staying in that band, because I feel like if you, you know, stay in the same thing from age 15 to 29, that's just like something's not, you know, like, of course, you're going to grow and evolve. But, you know, that was like the nuts and bolts of how I became the drummer that I am, regardless of, you know, whether I'm still doing it or not.
Right.
But it was kind of always a conflict for me. Well, not really for me, but like I was trying to finish high school. And then after high school, I tried to go to community college and like that did not go well, because I was like, well, I could go to class and I could do this, or I could not go to class and play this gig in Georgia and in Knoxville, or like whatever I would rather be doing. But I'm so glad. I mean, I'm not glad that I, you know, wasted time at community college. But
we all have our moments that we succeed and fail and we learn from, right?
It was not my most shining academic moment. But, you know, I'm glad I did that at the age that I did. And then I ended up going back to school and doing really well, like when I was ready. But yeah, it was always kind of like a lot of my other friends just like didn't do that or didn't understand or weren't allowed to like do the things that I was doing. Cause like, I don't know, I was like a child basically, like just like going away and just like driving away in a van somewhere.
Well, to be honest, Eliza, like most people, again, don't understand the music industry, period, in general. And so then, yeah, if it is someone who is maybe out of the norm of the perceived realm, right? A younger woman, a drummer who's a woman, which is sometimes a little unique. I'm sure there was a lot of those, like, wait, you do what? And so I can imagine the conflict for you was, this is an exciting world. I'm loving this, but also I have this part of me that wants education and all of that. So how have you navigated that? What are you doing now with some of your time? Obviously, you're still playing a lot of music. What are you doing to balance your life fully and get everything that you need and keep music as a priority?
That's a really great question. I feel like my life is very balanced right now.
So yes.
I finished school. I went to UNCA. Journalism and communications.
I love
yes,
that.
Yes, I graduated in 2020 when I was 27, and I got a lot out of it, and I'm glad that I waited. And then now I am working at Minx, which is a little boutique on North Lexington, and I do a lot of the merchandising, and I don't know, I really love it there, and I love the people, and Rebecca, the owner, is awesome, and she's a musician too, so we talk about that a lot, and I'm really enjoying myself there. I have all these other projects that I'm doing.
Yeah, let's dive into some of the projects. Yeah. Tell me which one maybe should we start with? I don't even know.
So the Smoky Mountain Sirens, that's like the most long-standing project okay. that I am currently in. And that is a rock and roll band. And we've been around for about 3 years. We just released an album called Solid 8 back in August. So that's on Bandcamp and Spotify. You can buy the album on Bandcamp and stuff. But so that's going well. And
it's, you know, it's an all-female group, right? If I remember correctly.
It's an all-female group. We're going to have a quiet winter and then see where everybody's at in the spring, because Amy is out with Daikaiju sporadically. I have other projects. And then Rose has the Guitar Witch. So she's very busy with that a lot. But so we have an album out, and, you know, that's been really fun.
And sometimes that's really nice to, again, like you said, in this idea of balancing, especially with music, especially with an industry that can require a lot of energy and time, the touring market, which is where a lot of musicians tend to get play and growth, it can be really overwhelming. So I love hearing you say how you're building projects now that can really afford the space and time, right? The Smoky Mountain Sirens, y'all can take other projects, you can pause, you can record when you want. So let's dive into some of the other ones, maybe Tight next. Tell me about how you got involved with them and what that was all about.
So Tight is, like you said, kind of like a glam rock, garage rock band, and it's with Tennant, who I've known for like a little over a year now. And that's been really fun. We actually have only had one show at Fleetwoods about a month ago. And, you know, like, we're going to look forward to, you know, doing more stuff in the future. And I really like playing that kind of music, and I really like playing with him. And that's been really fun. And then Istari is a psych rock, rock and roll, kind of just like a heavy rock. And it's more on like the jammier side of things, but we also have a lot of songs that are more structured and more heavy. But that's with Waylon Redman, who rips the guitar, and then Chris Herbig on the bass. And that's been really fun. And we actually have a residency at Fleetwoods in January every Tuesday. So that's Tuesdays. And we're going to have a different band play with us each week. So I figured, you know, during the quiet months, that would be something fun to do.
And I can just imagine too, you know, again, you were touring with this band, having all these sort of conflicts of school, career, all the, you know, and then the pandemic hit, which sort of changed everyone's entire demeanor. And now we get to sort of decide what it looks like. So talk to me about how you are deciding what shows you pick, right? You just said you have this residency. How do you choose what works for you and the different bands and projects that you have? Because a lot of the people that listen to this too are other creatives, performers. Some of them are definitely less far along than you are in your career. So any thoughts or tips like, hey, I'm in my garage playing music. Now what? What's next? Yeah. How do I get there?
I really feel like I've realized in the past like 3 years, I want to play. Of course, you need to make money. And of course, like, you know, there are things that need to be done and certain reasons people take gigs. But I now more than ever just really want to play the music. I want to play music that I really enjoy and music that I would listen to and just really be so excited and into the things that I'm doing.
I think that is so clear and so powerful because, again, if you're an artist and a creative, you can do that as a hobby or you can do that as a profession or somewhere in between, right?
Exactly.
And so what I hear you saying is identifying for you that it's maybe in more that gray area, right, of somewhere in between where someone else might say, okay, this is the only thing I want to do. What does that look like? And then there's a different conversation. You may have to be in studios and perform music that you aren't always interested in, or you have to really work on building a Patreon or, you know, whatever the platforms are that are going to financially support you so you can be creative how you want. And I just really honor, Eliza, that there are a lot of us. I am not someone who has ever wanted to make all of my money off music and creativity. And I went too far to the other side. I thought I wasn't allowed to perform or sing because I wasn't a professional. So there's a lot of us, I think, finding this middle area that creativity can enhance our lives. It can be a part of our lives. It can be a side hustle. It can be a full-time thing. Yeah. You really get the freedom to choose, right?
Yeah, just do the things that feel right with the people you like to be around. And I'm at a point in my life where I want to be really, really, really stoked, no matter how much money I'm making, about what I'm doing. And of course, there are moments where you have to make money, et cetera. But like, just make sure you're really excited about it. And that's just where I'm at.
So I kind of really want to dive in for a second, because again, you've got several projects. You're talking a lot about what excites you. How do you build musical relationships with people? Because that is really difficult. Like I've said, there's a lot of people who maybe get proficient enough. Like I've got two songs under my belt with the ukulele, and now I'm like, no, what? How do I ask someone? So how do you build a musical relationship with someone from your perspective?
Like networking or like really getting into playing?
No, like with the music. Yeah, let's do more than music. Maybe networking can come up, but I'm curious about the musical relationship building. That part seems really magical in some ways.
Yeah, totally. And it's like a whole conversation, secret language almost.
Exactly.
To play music with people. And I think I have developed musical relationships better during times where I really trusted myself as a musician. You know what I mean? Like it comes from, you know, feeling really competent and trusting of yourself in all kinds of musical situations. And people will then like feel secure around you to like play their best. And like I said about learning to play music, I think part of the, you know, big part of playing music with other people is also listening.
Yeah.
And and sometimes you gel with people and sometimes you don't. But like those are two key things that are really important to me when it comes to, building musical relationships.
Well, and I think you, again, hit it on the head when you're really confident in knowing who you are. You aren't necessarily going to project like, oh, should this person like me? They're going to validate. Or you're not going to shift who you are to sound like someone. You're going to really authentically build from your creative place, and that person can do the same. So trust sounds like a big part of it. And just being willing to do it. And like you said, not take it personal if it's just not the right fit either, right?
Totally, because it's not personal.
Right. And yes, I always say business is personal and it's not personal, right? Everything in our lives actually impacts us. We have a feeling and reaction, and that's fair. But the responsibility of us is to say, how is this feeling and reaction actually my responsibility to shift? Am I just not in the right relationships? Should I try a different, you know, bands are so much like real partner relationships, intimate relationships. It's give and take, it's growth, it's all of that. So I just genuinely love unpacking that thought and combo. So we're going to wrap up soon, but I want to like poke, what are you looking for in 2023? What are you excited about? We didn't even mention that you're also playing music with Greg Cartwright too. So what are we looking forward to in 2023, Eliza?
I am looking forward to so much. I feel like I finally kind of like settled in a move forward. So I'm just excited to play more gigs with new people, with new projects. I'm really excited about playing with Greg because he just rocks and he's so fun to play with. So we're going to probably start playing some shows soon come New Year. And I'm just excited to, I feel like I've leaned into a lot of things that weren't super easy or comfortable for me. And that's been really helpful. And now I feel really secure in that space. And I'm excited to go on with that.
Wow. Like what?
Well, just like playing different kinds of music. Like with Greg, it's a little different than stuff I would normally play. It's not like wildly different, but it's like, you know, I leaned into it and I really enjoy it. And then with Astari, it's like really heavy and the songs are like 7 minutes long. And that's not something that I was super used to playing, but I love playing it. Like, that is like one of my favorite styles to play on the drums.
What a great point. You know, from my perspective, the coach in me is like, ooh, Eliza, you've learned to step into the growth edge. And like, I just speak so much about that conversation that staying in your comfort zone is only going to keep you comfortable. And so really stepping to those things that bring a little bit of that fear, because fear and excitement are like nano spaces apart in our brain and how they function. So if we can rewire like, ooh, this thing I'm terrified of, oh gosh, 7 minutes, oh, a monologue on my radio show, which I have to do, you know, all these things.
Right.
So powerful to find the fruit from that. So Eliza, I am so honored to know you, to have watched your career, to hear all of the elevation you've had the last couple of years. And I'm curious, how do people find you? How do they stay in contact? How do they know where all your cool shows are?
So Instagram is the best way. My Instagram is just at Liza Drummer, LizaDrummer. The Smoky Mountain Sirens Instagram. And then is Starry the Band Instagram. But yeah, and my Instagram, like, just reach me through that for anything.
Perfect. So y'all go be hopping in her DMs, asking where all the cool shows are, and cheering Eliza on.
Yay! Thank you so much!
Of course, Eliza. And as always, this is Art Heroes with JPH, where we share tips and tools of our community's most innovative entrepreneurs, artists, and creative business owners. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please connect by visiting Biz Radio US or arthero.biz. We'd love to hear your show suggestions or any questions you may have. And as always, stay creative.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.